Hello and welcome to Film Kid Asks, the podcast where I ask questions to working professionals in the film industry from the perspective of someone just getting started. My name is Jordan, and today I'm joined by the Canadian director who has worked on titles like Tin Star, Helix, and Orphan Black, Grant Harvey. Now he's working directing the cinematics of AAA games at Ubisoft. He also happens to be my dad. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Jordan. Nice to be here.
So you grew up in Calgary and went to film school at SAIT, which is a technical school. What are your thoughts on film schools and programs, and is there anything about your education that you would have changed?
You know, it's interesting. I think film schools, from what I understand, they vary extremely from school to school. The programs are different, the teachers are different, but I do feel like there's a number of things about film school that are, I think, super important. One of them is the main thing for me, I think, is that you meet your tribe, like you meet your people. I still work with and collaborate with a number of people that I went to film school with, like John Fawcett, Tom Best, there's a Craig Robleski. There's a ton of people that I still collaborate with and work with and or keep in touch with. And I think that you foster those relationships, you find your kindred spirits, and you do work together and kind of grow up and learn together and find your voices together. And I think that's super important. And the other thing I think about, you know, I went to a technical college, which was, I think, a good thing for me because I got to get on the gear really quickly, learn the equipment, learn the processes, learn the different positions, and get out there and just start doing stuff, which worked really well for me. If I could change anything, I feel like, just especially knowing my background, you know, my dad owned a transmission store and I didn't come from a long line of artists. So I think I would have benefited from going to an art school, at least for a little bit of time, to sort of learn how to be an artist, you know, just sort of free myself to, admit to myself that I'm an artist and that's what I do. And yeah, I have no regrets. I think I had a great time at SAIT and it turned out very well for me.
So how do you feel being Canadian and more specifically from the Prairies has affected your style and creative vision?
That's a great question. I think where you're from very much affects your aesthetic and the way you see the world and your point of view. I know when I moved to Toronto after, you know, the big chunk of my career was in the Prairies and doing work there, and that's where I grew up. When I moved to Toronto and started working on TV shows in Toronto, a lot of the producers would watch my dailies or see my cuts, and they were like, you always find wide shots that we would have never considered in our sets. We see more of our sets than when other people shoot, and you always like to find nice big wide shots. And I think I was like, that's curious. Like, why would that be? And I realized that because that's the way I see the world. I see the world in a very wide perspective because the Prairies are a very, and I like muted colors. And so I sort of started thinking about that. And I, you know, I worked on a show called Heartland. And sometimes I know that the crew and the DOP and the camera people would have trouble with directors coming from Toronto because they were shooting things on longer lenses, more like a cop show, more confined than that, because that was their aesthetic. A great example of that is the Mexican cinematographers, you know, 5-10 years ago were kind of the hot cinematographers, and the way they use color is something I would never think of or know how to do, but you can tell that it's very much influenced the way they see the world because the colors that they are surrounded by. So I do feel like it very much affects the way you see things and your point of view. And I think, you know, growing up in the Prairies and like I say, with a father that owned mechanic stores, I had a pretty strong work ethic and it was a hard go to create a career in Calgary. So I just had to work at it for a long time and be really, you know, just be really committed and really patient.
Kind of going off of that, how do you think being Canadian has affected the trajectory of your career?
Well, again, I don't know that I would change anything. I mean, okay, that's not true. There's things I would change. I feel like maybe I hung on in Calgary a little bit too long. I felt like I needed the support of my team there and my friends and, you know, and our family lived there. Probably could have pushed myself harder by moving, getting out of that comfort zone. I think being in Canada, especially right now as filmmakers and making television, I think it's actually a really good time to be here. A lot of stuff shoots here. That doesn't necessarily mean they hire Canadian directors, but certainly other crew positions. A lot of stuff shoots here, and that's allowed our technicians and actors and everyone to up their game a whole bunch. So now when I as a Canadian, when I do my projects, I'm working with the best in the world. So I think right now being Canadian, I think, is a really great thing. My agent, my manager are from the States, done some work down there, and a lot of work that originates from down there but shoots up here is kind of what I end up doing. Do I wish I maybe had given it a go down there? Maybe some regrets that way. Certainly, you know, Hollywood is where a lot of work is done. But I think, you know, there's a lot of Canadians working down there, and you can feel that influence, you know, the Canadian. There's a sense of humor that we have. There's a way we see the world. I think that all, to me, builds who you are as an artist and a filmmaker. So, yeah. And the other thing that's interesting, I think, about, you know, when you start to look back on your themes, I feel like there's a lot of man against nature sort of themes and isolation themes and those kinds of things that come out of Canada. So I feel like there's a little bit of a voice to that as well, that is also part of what I do, for sure.
So what do you feel is the most important part of the process to you? Of the whole job, what is the most important part?
The most important part. I mean, it sounds a bit cliche, but prep is pretty important. I feel like choosing your material, I would say, would be the most important. However, you're not usually that lucky all the time. Sometimes material chooses you. Sometimes you have to do something to make a living. So certainly, I think if you can, you know, on your personal projects and that, making sure that what you're working on means something to you and digs into your soul and your heart and that kind of thing. But I think as far as like process wise, a good prep will sort of basically set you on the right path, because it's all hard and there's lots of challenges all the way through. But if you can prep properly, or at least attempt to prep properly, it will really set you up. So I would say prep. Yeah.
What's your favorite part of the process?
You know, I love shooting. I find certain parts of prep are interesting and fun. Like I love location scouting. When you're location scouting, it's kind of all about what might be. It's like, it's the exciting part where you're going, oh, and you see something and you're like, that's perfect. And we could, oh, but I wasn't thinking of that way. But if we did it this way, it would work in this location. And it's all sort of about possibilities at that point. And I love working with like production designers and costume designers and cinematographers and prep, because you can start to feel the North Star coming through as you're collaborating with people and as the material, you're working with the writer and the producers, and as the material starts speaking to you, you start to realize what the North Star is. And then that becomes your job to be that protector of that North Star and trying to get everyone aimed in that direction. At a certain point, prep becomes extremely painful, and it's a classic where it's usually you and the first AD and the cinematographer are like, okay, let's go hit the floor, because you can kind of over prep things too. You can overthink things. You can kind of feel like you're squeezing the life out of it. So I love location scouting. I love the design of things, talking about it. But I think shooting probably for me is the favorite part. You know, I like being on the floor. I like shooting. I like collaborating. I love when you capture something and it makes you like, gives you goosebumps and you're just like, oh my God, that was it, you know, or you weren't expecting something and it blows your mind. That's all very awesome. But I mean, it's all pretty great. And then the sound mix is the best. Because editing is kind of a little bit about, especially at the beginning, you feel like terrible. You watch your rough cut or your assembly, your editor put together, and you're just like, oh my God, this is terrible. Like, just terrible. And you're like super depressed for a while. And then you start to mold it and you fry some babies that you're protecting, and you start to think outside the box of what you, so editing becomes very creative, but it's a lot of times it's about what you didn't get. You're like, ah, if I only would have done that or whatever. But then when you get to the mix, it's just making it awesome. You just like go, oh my God, this is great. Cause it just gets better and better, and there's nothing that you screwed up and there's nothing that you missed. And so, you know, mix is pretty great too, but you know what? I'm kind of a nerd about all of it. I kind of love the whole process.
So what do you think are the most important skills a director can have?
I think there's two things that are sort of neck and neck. I think, like I mentioned, the North Star, I think understanding what the project is about and knowing what that is crucial. And it may evolve, but at least having some germ of something that everyone can follow is super, super important. And so you need to dig that out. I'll come back to it, but like there's something I wanted to recommend to you guys as far as reading scripts. So just remind me if I forget. But the second thing I think is communication. Like I've seen other directors on set that struggle with communication, and it does make it difficult for everyone. I think learning to be clear, learning to be concise. I also see other directors that talk way too much to actors and try and explain everything. And I think, you know, ultimately each actor is different and needs something different from you, but try not to over explain things, I think is really good. But yeah, just having that clarity of communication. But yeah, just back to the germ of the idea. One of the things I would recommend when you're reading a script, if you're a director and you're given a script, I make sure that I can read the whole thing in one sitting and I don't allow myself to get interrupted. Like I will go to a coffee shop or something and read it in one go as fast as you can, like without stopping and making notes. Because I feel like that first read, you can never have it again. Like you only get to read it for the first time once. And I feel like it really informs you at a very DNA level what it's kind of about. You get feelings from it. And I think that's super, super, super crucial. And then you can start to dig in and analyze it and break it apart, pull it apart. But I feel like if you did that first, and I've done it and it's a mistake, if you do that first, you can get lost and you don't know what it is that it's so much of this job is like even when I'm shortlisting a scene or gonna, you know, thinking about how I'm gonna block a scene, there'll be one little idea that will pop out of the script. Like it might be something as simple as, oh, I feel like at this moment, I'd love to have the camera under the bed and then have somebody, you know, like they look under the bed or just whatever it is. And then that will become the anchor for how I think about putting the rest of the scene together, because that scene was about somebody hiding something. So it just kind of made sense, you know, and it was a gut thing. Like I work very much from my guts and I'm not a super intellectual director. I'm more from my heart and my stomach, you know. But yeah, that would just, as far as like sort of passing something along to young filmmakers, I think really try to understand what the project is about, you know?
Kind of speaking about, you know, working with actors, and communicating with them, how has your process working with actors evolved over the span of your career?
It's kind of how I've evolved across the board, which is trying to become simpler about everything, really trying to strip things, like trying to get me out of the equation and let it be about the story. Because I started in commercials and that was where I first started to make money. And that's definitely something we should talk about because it's definitely an avenue. You know, I started by doing commercials and some documentaries and industrial films and music videos. And then that led to my dramatic work. But I feel like, especially when you're starting out, you get in your own way. Like you try to put yourself all over it. And I think that the same goes to acting, like to actors. You try and, especially in commercials, because you're talking about little pieces, you're trying to take the performance that you have in your head that you've thought about 100 times that you, you know, when you were in the shower on the way to, you know, before you went to set, you thought this is exactly how this actor needs to play it. And then trying to like dictate that to them. And what I've learned is you need to collaborate with the actors and that you'll only get something interesting and special and profound if you get out of the way of that and you know, work with them on leading it to what you believe it should be, but being open to what they bring to the table and trying to, you know, keep it simple and not fill their heads full of nonsense that they don't need to be thinking about. Because ultimately, for most actors, a good performance comes from being free and not thinking and just being in the moment and letting it happen. So what I've learned to understand and try to do with my work is just be out of the way of the actors. I'm there to give them the safest space they can to work and to encourage them and sometimes to tell them it wasn't good enough and, you know, just, but basically be there for them, just create a safe space where they can work. It's definitely evolved that way.
How do you create that safe space and give them that freedom and protect them on set?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the most challenging things about being an episodic director. So an episodic director, I'm talking about being a guest director. So if, say on Orphan Black, I'm gonna direct episode 3 of season 1, and that's the only episode I'll direct. And I show up usually 7 or 8 days before the episode, do all my prep, meet the cast at the read through, and then I'm on the floor shooting with them. So I don't really have chance. It's not like a feature where you're working with the cast and rehearsing and that kind of thing. You just don't have that. I'm in their house. I'm supporting them. it trained me to realize that each actor has a different process. Some actors like to talk things out and talk things through. Some actors don't want to hear from you. They're like, was it good? I felt good about it. Let's try it one more time. Sure, let's do that. You know, like each actor has a different process. But the biggest thing, like, doesn't matter what actor you're dealing with and how big a star they are. And, you know, and I've worked with some pretty acclaimed actors, like they all have insecurities that manifest themselves in different ways because they're doing a weird job in front of a bunch of people that's going to be forever on a TV show or a film or a piece of art. That's the other thing. I think if you're going to direct, you need to act once. You need to go and act in a short film and feel how naked and quite frankly terrifying it feels to be in front of the camera, because I think that will help you realize that you do have to create that safe space for them. You do have to protect them from crew that are distracting. You do have to clear the crew out so that you can sit there and work with the actors and figure it out and make them feel like they're comfortable. You know, just really protecting their space and not telling them how to do it, but just how to, like, helping them figure out how to play it.
So more generally now, how do you cultivate a good set environment just with the crew and the cast and, you know, and the pressure and all of the things that go with shooting?
It's hard, man. It's something I have to work at all the time because I put an intense amount of pressure on myself because I deeply care about what we do. It doesn't matter the show. I can't turn off how much I care. I just kind of feel like what we do is forever and we're the storytellers of our time. You know, as novelists, at one point it was scratching, you know, drawings on cave walls, and right now we are the storytellers of our time. And I feel like a deep responsibility, and I feel very grateful and very privileged that I am one of the storytellers. So I take it very seriously. Sometimes I take it too seriously. I have a very high bar for myself, and I struggle with when crew people don't have a high bar. So that makes me frustrated. So it's difficult sometimes to control, like, and the pressure of just being a director is very intense. Sometimes it's hard not to lose your shit. And so that's something I work on, because you want the right kind of nervous energy on the set, not the wrong kind of, like, you don't want that sort of, oh my God, we're screwed energy. You want, oh my God, we got to go because this might be awesome. And if we might miss it, you know, like, that's the kind of energy you need. So just helping to cultivate that. And I think your AD and your DOP help you. Like, if you're someone that tends to get anxious and irritated quick, like me, then it's always great if I have an AD and a DP that can kind of keep me calm. And then if they're losing it, I see that. And then I try and keep calm, because it ultimately, we're the sort of the point of the spear on set and need to sort of set that example. But it is tricky, you know, it's a lot of people, lots of times in a very small place, lots of times with people that have been doing it for 12 hours a day for months on end. So to keep everyone focused sometimes is really challenging.
So what do you think makes for a bad set environment?
So there's two kind of bad set environments. One of them, I actually find a good challenge, which is, like, I've worked on shows where you could tell that the crew and the cast had done dozens and dozens of episodes and were kind of they were basically mailing it in, and everyone was just doing the bare minimum. And I understand that because it's long and it's hard, but I actually like showing up with a crew and a cast that sort of feels that way. Like, I find it fun and challenging to inspire them to come in with some ideas and go, guys, I got this, you know, I really need your help and I want to make this awesome and here's what we could do. And you see them spark up, like they got into this because they're filmmakers, you know, otherwise they'd do something else because it's way too damn hard. So they would be doing something else. So, like, they've kind of had it crushed out of them for whatever reason. And I love sparking that up. But that is a type of set that kind of bums me out, is that I feel like they don't care. And then the other thing I think is just, like, sets that are, I think, disrespectful to the actors, especially. Actors can be a pain in the ass for sure. And they're kind of overly spoiled. We do too much to sort of protect them in terms of, like, keeping them away from set and, you know, just less protecting, more babying them. What does bother me and where I'll clamp down hard is when people are sort of causing situations or being distracting or being, like, disruptive to the acting process, because acting's super hard and super revealing and super you're putting yourself out there. So I do clamp down hard when I feel like there's not a safe space for the actors.
It sounds like a lot of the work is just balancing different needs from different people and making sure that everyone's kind of pointing in the same direction. So obviously there's a huge amount of your job that centers around those relationships and creative partnerships. So how do you foster those relationships in creating a productive environment where you can collaborate, but also where you're all working towards the same goal?
Yeah, I think it just throws back to that idea of clarity, but also having a very passionate, being very passionate about your idea and pushing that idea wherever you can, whenever you can. Like lots of times I'll create like a lookbook, or this is something that you guys should try, the directors and the crowd. Anytime I see an image that I think is interesting, or I like the way it's composed, or the way it makes me feel, or the colors, or I've started a file folder on my computer and I'll just pull it off and stick it in that folder. And then one of the first things I do once I've read a script and kind of putting my head in a project, I just really quickly, and on my Mac, I can flip through the images really quickly. And then I'll pull out anything that feels like that project. I'll pull it out and put it in a separate folder. And then I can look at all these images, and usually it's with the DP and the production designer, and we kind of start to figure out, okay, what was it about all those things that made you feel that way? And then we can start finding the North Star, you know, and or it might be a line of dialogue, or one of the locations might be the North, you know, and everything gets built around that. And I think just sharing that as much as possible. I know a lot of directors feel like they have to be sort of secret about their plan. I'm the opposite. I want everyone to know what my plan is, what the North Star is, what we're trying to achieve, because it engages people and it helps them do their job. And so, yeah, I think that's a big one. Just communicating your ideas and being brave to do that. Like, put yourself out there like an actor, you know? Sometimes it feels very vulnerable to share the sort of stuff that feels arty. And, you know, a certain crew might roll their eyes, whatever, but just do it. Like, put yourself out there, because the filmmakers will latch onto that and help you make it. That's what they want to do. They want to help you make it awesome. That's the bottom line.
So speaking about, you know, connections, obviously I got very lucky and I was born into a position where I have naturally built in connections. But obviously there's a lot of film students that don't have that. So how do you think as film students, people can work to build those connections, like in their current state of not having any?
So that was me. So it's a great question. I was a film nerd, you know, I loved Jaws and Star Wars and John Hughes films. And I made videos in high school and Super 8 films and started going to film school. I had no idea. Like, I had no idea how I would break in. And I was in Calgary, you know, like I was not in Toronto or Vancouver or even Montreal or, you know. So film school, I met kind of my posse. Like, we actually made a company. We were called Midnight Productions, because we knew where the key was to the gear, and we would, not that I'm suggesting you do this, we would shoot stuff. The instructors were cool with it, and they were just like, because they knew myself and John Fawcett and some of the others, Tom Best, we were so passionate, they wanted us to get out and use the gear. So that's what we did, and we started even, you know, doing little industrial films and that. But basically, there's sort of two paths for directing. There's like, well, there's a million paths, but there's sort of, at that point, you could work your way up through the crew. And when I graduated, I thought, oh, okay, well, I guess I'll give that a shot. And I PA'd on a couple commercials, and I just didn't like it. So I decided I wasn't going to do that. I talked to some ADs that said, yeah, you know, we've been at it for 15 years and we're hoping to direct soon. And I'm like, oh boy, I'd almost rather not do that. So what I did was I started, you know, we made our little company and we would do music videos for free and all sorts of stuff for free, and worked at a bar to pay for, you know, I didn't make any money, lived in my parents' basement. But we started getting a body of work that was good. And then we started showing that we cut a lot of fake commercials out of the, like, spec commercials out of the material that we were shooting. Because this was back when we had to shoot film. It's not like you guys that can shoot beautiful, beautiful work on, you know, on an iPhone, for God's sake. So we started cutting together fake commercials and started taking those out to the ad agencies. And they liked our material. And so they started to give us little jobs. And then that just kind of grew from there. So just kind of making contacts through, I feel like the one way would be if you got out and you could just go join the union and be PAs and work your way up and meet a ton of people and shoot short films with those people. That's a completely legitimate way. And you'll learn a lot and you'll meet a lot of great people. The only problem is you'll end up working a lot and you may not direct as much as if you went the other way, which is figure out, you know, how to not starve and just shoot and shoot your own stuff and direct your own stuff and find your voice. But either way, you're going to start to meet people. And it's not like you have to meet the top tier people. Like, you just start meeting a group of like-minded filmmakers and you start making stuff. And then one of those people will hit it a little bit. So, and they'll drag you along. I hope that kind of makes sense. But that was my path, is we just kind of all kind of dragged ourselves along, you know, until we started doing the work.
So you kind of mentioned this a few times now. You have had a very diverse set of, you know, projects that you've worked on and genres that you've worked in, and even just like, you know, commercials versus drama versus film versus now you're working in a video game. So how has that impacted your skill set and your career, and what are your thoughts on having to direct so diversely, especially, you know, as a working Canadian?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't really have a choice because I was in Calgary. I just took whatever. And I think even like, because even commercials, I would shoot everything, car commercials, comedy, pretty pictures, dialogue. And then when I started getting enough work that I went to Toronto to see if I could find a representative in Toronto, they looked at my reel and they're like, well, what do? And I'm like, commercials? They're like, no, but you know, they were looking for the blonde haired dude that drives the black convertible car that, you know, like they like things very specific. You can't do comedy and car commercials. That's impossible. And it's not, of course, we're filmmakers, right? And even my manager has talked to me about this. It's kind of a double-edged sword. I feel like I know that it made me a better filmmaker because I shot a ton of different things and I'm very technically oriented. I'm very adaptable. I learned a lot from each discipline and each type of filmmaking. The negative is that I'm a good director, but I'm a little bit more than a journeyman director. I would classify myself as kind of a kick-ass journeyman director. I definitely have a voice, but I feel like by doing a lot of different things, I didn't necessarily develop a specific voice that someone could sell, that an agent could sell or a manager could sell, because I could kind of do it all. So that's something to be aware of a little bit. Again, I have no regrets. I would have done things a little bit differently and probably focused a little bit more. But honestly, you'll learn everything. Go out and shoot, man. Shoot industrial films, shoot fashion videos. I shot dance, like recitals, you name it, shoot it. Because you'll learn something from everything.
So kind of now talking about this transition into the world of video games, where you're shooting motion capture instead of, you know, the traditional set environment, how has that changed your approach to directing?
Well, it's tickled. I've always, especially from doing commercials, I'm this weird combination of I like things to be loose and let the sort of universe tell you how something should come together. But then I like being really precise. Like, I'm very Fincher-esque about my camera movement and, you know, how background performers should frame the shot, those kind of things. Which when you're doing Canadian television or episodic television, you don't necessarily have the time. That's the stuff that the people out there, like the directors that are making $150 million movies, have the time to be that finicky. For the men and women shooting episodic directing, there's not a lot of time. So I've really, with doing motion capture and animated projects, I've allowed to let that part of my brain kind of expand and really just kind of blow up, where if I can dream it up, I can do it. And that's really been awesome and maybe better, because I always was very conservative because I own my own company and had to pay for, you know, food for you and our family and our house. I had my own company doing commercials. So whatever was left over was our profit. So I was always very careful about how we shot and shot, put it on the screen, but nothing extra, you know? And this has been, I find that animation and video games, I'm doing material that like is the size of a James Bond movie that I would never have the opportunity to shoot. So I'm loving it. It's really interesting.
So what would your advice be then to, you know, people who might have a very specific idea of what directing is, or, you know, in film school, obviously especially going into film school, I feel like a lot of people have a specific director that they idolize or a specific idea of what directing is. So what would you say to those people, you know, with your diverse experience, kind of wanting to go into directing but not necessarily knowing all the options?
Yeah, I mean, I think film school is a great time to try directing. And most people, like if you asked all the people going into the film school, like starting film school, I'm sure a lot of them want to direct. And by the time they get out the end of film school, they realize that either that's not suited for them, it's too much damn work, or there's some other element that of filmmaking that's way more interesting to them. So it does get weeded down, I feel like. Like I said before, I think it's a real privilege to be a director. Like, it really is important and special. And, you know, I think you just got to do the work. You know, you got to shoot. I think doing some writing's good. You may not be, I'm not a good writer, but I'm good at working with writers because I write. Like, I'll write down ideas. And then I've written a few scripts just, you know, at the beginning of my career, they were pretty terrible, but I learned the process of working with writers, and I'm very good at working with writers. I think just doing the work, because ultimately in this day and age, it is much more democratic than when I started. You know, if I shot a music video, just to give you an example of how I would have to shoot a music video when I got out of film school, I had clapper loaders, which was when we were shooting on film. The junior position in the camera department was loading the film into the cameras and out of the cameras. And sometimes there would be a little bit of film left over, and they were called a short end. So I had moles of clapper loaders at different shows that were collecting the short ends for me, and we would put them in the freezer. And then when we had enough short ends, we would borrow gear and do what we could to get the gear and then shoot the music video on the film. And meanwhile, we'd be working in the bar to save enough money to process the film. And then we'd work in the bar a little more, and then we'd scan the film so that we could edit it. Like, that's what was involved with shooting a music video. You can literally go with your iPhone and your laptop, and you could make a music video in 4K that could be broadcast. So it was very much then, it was about persistence. It was certainly about privilege, you know, about being someone that could afford to live in their parents' basement while they were doing this. I was very lucky that way. And it was about, you know, like time. Whereas now I feel like a lot of that's been taken out. And I really do feel like, because there's so many filmmakers now, you know, that are shooting and doing that, it's become, because it's become so democratic, it's flooded. So what you need to pop out, you don't just need to get it done. That's what, that was my era. You just, if you got it done, you were amazing. You guys, you don't need to get it done, but you need to also have a voice. You know, you need to find your voice, because it's your voice that will carry you through your career. And I mean, be careful you don't put too much pressure. I really didn't feel like I found my voice until I was in my late 30s, early 40s. That's when I felt like I was like, oh, I see that. That's a Grant. That's a Grant shot, or that's a Grant feel. That material is very Grant, you know, like it comes to you after time. But I feel like that's such a crucial thing, is to find your voice, for sure. That's how you will find work and be discovered and ultimately be fulfilled, for sure.
Right. So besides, like, obviously going out there and shooting, that's a given if you want to be a filmmaker. Yeah. What are the best things that a student filmmaker can do now to further their knowledge, experience, and hopefully their careers?
Other than shooting, because that's a given, like you say, and not just shooting, but shooting and sharing and getting critiqued and finding your little posse, your little tribe, and sharing your ideas with each other, and, you know, and ripping your stuff apart and lifting you back up, yourselves back up again. I feel like spending some time on other sets, on professional sets, is a must. I don't think that's necessarily has to be your path, but I think you need to go out because you'll learn things about protocol. You'll learn things about safety. Like, a lot of student films, a lot of independent films do stupid shit, and they clamp down on that on proper film sets. So you can learn a lot. You'll learn about things that you won't even be able to do on your short films or your student films, but at least you'll start seeing process and seeing what the different positions. So I do think that's important, for sure. And also volunteering. Volunteer, if you want to direct, go volunteer on someone's shoot as a PA or as, you know, a boom operator or something. I think also, this is my opinion and kind of the way I'm oriented, is learning everyone's position. I think that's key. And it comes back to the communication part. Like, if you know what's important to a boom operator and you know what's important to an art director, you know what's important to a sound man and a camera operator, and you know, all those things, you can communicate with them more clearly. And also, you gain their respect. Like, film sets are, it's like a shark tank, man. If the sharks whiff a little bit of insecurity, or if you're not sure of yourself, or if you're kind of, you know, if you're bullshitting, they'll sniff it out. They've seen it all, and they'll eat you alive. So knowing, you gain respect from different crew positions if you know what they do, what's important to them. It's just a really smart thing to do. And then I think just meeting people, like, you know, volunteering at TIFF and getting out there to, you know, when this COVID is over, go out and try and, you know, volunteer on some events, go and, you know, phone the DGC up and see if there's anything you can volunteer for, just again, to get you out there and meet people.
Yeah, I think that's great. So I'm going to actually open it up to a few of my friends now, and then they can ask some questions.
I have like a question that kind of pertains to writing, and I guess on top of that, like confidence in general. So kind of like, I guess when you start out, you have to bear being bad to begin with and like learning how to grow and everything. But where do you find, I guess, confidence in that voice that you're trying to grow over time? And how do you know where you can trust yourself and put yourself out there? So how do you kind of manage your ego in the filmmaking
yeah.
process?
Well, if you figure it out, let me know. I can't think of anyone that I work with that's completely figured that out. And I think that's probably a good thing. I think you'd be kind of a complete, you know, monster if you figured that all out. And I've met a few of those that think they have. But I'm going to tell you a little secret. Most of the stuff you do at the beginning will be shit. So part of what you need to learn, and I feel like one of the most valuable skills I have, and it was what attracted me to some of my friends early on, like John Fawcett and Craig Robleski and Tom Best and some of the editors that I worked with, even though we didn't know how to get there, we knew what was good and what wasn't good. Because we were shocked by some people that thought something was good, but it wasn't good. And it was obviously not good. And we would do stuff that was not good, but we were like, that's not good, because we just didn't know how to make it good. So I feel like watching a lot of stuff, like reading a lot of scripts, it sounds like you're interested in writing. And so reading screenplays, like not just transcripts, but like you can find them all over the internet, and read the shooting draft of a script and then watch the movie or the TV show and see what's different and what worked and what didn't work, because you'll start to really learn what's good and what's not. And ultimately, that's your best gift, because then you can start on set, go, like, I do it all the time. I'll be like, you know, to the camera operator, I'll be like, you know, I think we just, if you just like came over here a little bit, we wouldn't stack up that background, you know. And you start to learn, yeah, what's great and what works and what doesn't work. And then that gives you confidence. But that comes from experience, right? So at the beginning, it is definitely more just like putting it out there and understanding that your stuff's gonna, you know, there might be like little glimmers of awesomeness, and then a lot of it'll be crappy, and just being okay with that, but getting it out there and doing it. And then the other thing that's interesting is like measuring what success is, because you will run across a genius. Like, I just saw a video, this 15-year-old girl did a video, COVID video, that's like mind-blowingly good. And I'm just like, what? You know, how is it that good? My friend John Fawcett was very gifted. And I had, there was another director in Calgary, Jeff Weinrich, that had a very cool thing. And you will run across those people that are just kind of gifted right out of the gates. But don't let that freak you out. And don't compare yourself, I guess, is a big one. Because that becomes very tricky. I wasted a lot of energy comparing where I was in my career, or comparing my work to other people's work, because I should have just been doing the work and developing my own voice. But yeah, I think just starting to become very aware of what works and what doesn't will give you confidence. And that's something that's free to do. You know, you can just watch some good TV, watch some bad TV, start figuring out why something didn't work, you know, all of those things. Awesome. Does that make some sense?
Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much.
Yeah. And then get your stuff out there and be brave, you know?
Yeah.
Sure. Because it's not going to get made if it's on your desk, but it will get made someday if it's out there, you know?
Mm-hmm. Cool. Awesome.
You were talking about how you did, you tried to do PA work and then you kind of realized that it wasn't the right fit for you. And then you found your groove with directing. What is the moment where you kind of realized that directing was like your path and like it was what you really enjoyed to do versus like trying some other part of film or some other field?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm lucky that way because I knew in like junior high, like I was like one of those film nerds that just knew that that's what I wanted to do. I didn't even know really what the job was. I just knew that I wanted to make movies and TV, like mostly movies. Like I just really, that's something that really I felt like I would want to spend my life doing. So I was lucky that way. And that is exactly why I didn't work my way up through like PAing and ADing. Is in very short order, I realized that I would be spending a lot of my time, I'd make money, but spending a lot of my time doing things that weren't going to make me a better director. So I decided, certainly economically foolishly, I decided to just not do that. But, you know, just to be fair, I was in Calgary during the good times. So a lot of my friends were that weren't in the film industry were, you know, engineers and stuff, and they were buying their house and their car. And I was literally like, I didn't really make a living, like a proper living until I was about when I was 30. And I graduated when I was 21. So like it took 9 years of slogging to get to a point where I could support myself. My wife and I, you know, she supported us until I could, with, you know, with a crazy retail job, and we lived for super cheap. Yeah, so that was the indicator to me. And I'm, like I say, I was lucky. I just kind of knew. Now, I've met a lot of directors that didn't have that path, that were, you know, stunt coordinators, or that were camera operators, or that were actors that want to direct, that have figured out that they wanted to direct. So yeah, no real one way. Like I say, I was just kind of lucky that I knew. Lucky and unlucky. It's a bit like a crack addiction. You know, you can't, sometimes it causes you a lot of pain and you still have to do it. You know what I'm saying? Does that kind of answer?
No, that was actually super helpful. It kind of, it was more like, it was also reassuring that you were like, I was broke for such a long period of time. It didn't be liked, so it's okay.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's not, it's frustrating because it's like, it's very much like actors. Like the only actors we're exposed to and the only directors we're exposed to are like the top 3%, you know? And we see them, you know, in their mansions and their fancy cars. And like, there's a lot of people that squeak by for a lot of years, you know, and wash out because they can't. Either they're not in a situation where they can afford to do it anymore, or they lose faith in it, or they lose faith in themselves. It's very tricky. Like it's a hard go. So, but you'll know, like you'll know if it, I will say like, it's something that it's who I am. It's not what I do. And you'll know in your heart that it's something that's the artist part of it. Like we're artists, like, and you need to figure out a way to sort of tickle that part of your brain. So yeah, you'll know for sure.
Cool. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, I don't know how much experience you have, but I've heard that directors and director producers and like the people who start a movie are really intertwined with pitching. And pitching is something that is really tricky to do. And I was wondering if you have any advice for pitching or like getting funding in general for projects, especially like when you get out of film school, like grant applications or it's just in general.
That is a like extremely good question. There are a lot of brilliant filmmakers and directors that you've never heard of because they have no idea how to do that stuff. And that's part of the job. Learning to pitch, it's essential. And not even just for projects, like you're pitching, constantly pitching. That is the job, is pitching, basically. You have something, whether it's your concept or whether it's you pitching to try and get the work, whether it's your idea for how you want to shoot a scene, you're going to pitch that to the cast and crew. It is a sales job across the board. That's what it is. So, and I know that, you know, that there's a lot of people that are artistic or have ideas that aren't maybe as articulate in that. And it is literally something you will need to work on. If that is you, if you need to direct, but you're uncomfortable with the idea of selling yourself or selling your ideas or that kind of thing, like start practicing now because it's not going away. And there's some great books on pitching. There's lots of YouTube videos on pitching. Like there's lots of, you know, snake oil salesmen out there that will teach you, take your money and teach you how to pitch. But it is something to start thinking about soon. And I hope at your school, you have to pitch your projects, because that is a huge part of the process. And the better you get at it, the farther you'll go, for sure. So that's a great, great point. And then as far as like grant applications and that sort of thing, again, it is about selling your idea, because hopefully you'll be working with a producer or someone that can help you put the nuts and bolts of the application together. Like I actually just at Ubisoft, because one of the games I'm working on is going to be released soon, and they may want me to do some press, and I actually had to take a press class. I had to take classes on, ultimately I will be pitching the show to journalists, or the game to journalists. And it was really fascinating, because I haven't really thought about it for a long time, but it is important to be passionate about your idea and not necessarily give out the details, but try and transmit the part that makes it like so exciting to you. You know, if you can transmit why it keeps you up at night and why it gives you goosebumps and why you can't stop thinking about it, if you can transmit that and get the other person to start thinking about that, that is ultimately what pitching is about. And so just practicing that is huge. It's a great question, because it's going to be a big part of your life if you're going to direct, for sure.
Thank you very much. Yeah, that answered.
Yeah. That. Okay, yeah. Good.
All right. Well, I think that's all we have today. So thank you so much to all of the film students who participated and asked questions. And of course, thanks to you, Dad, for participating in this and answering that for us. I do want to end this off with asking you about 5 films that you would recommend to future filmmakers.
Okay. I decided that I'm going to just speak to Canadian filmmakers. So these are 5 Canadian filmmakers and films that mean something to me, or that affected me. So I'm going to start with a film called Highway 61, which was a film that Bruce McDonald directed. And I had, when I was in film school, I saw like some films by Adam Egoyan and some of the more intellectual filmmakers. And I was like, that's not me. Oh no, am I screwed? Like if I can't do that kind of movie. And then I saw Highway 61, and it was smart and funny, and it was a road movie, and it was irreverent, and it was rock and roll, and it was awesome. And I saw it just as I got out of film school, and I was like, yes, I can do this. So that is a huge film for me. So I would definitely recommend, and then watch Hardcore Logo, which is another movie that Bruce did, which is awesome. And then that led me to thinking about David Cronenberg and a movie called The Fly, because I was interested in horror and thriller films as well. And there was a lot of them that were just kind of crappy B movies. And I remember watching The Fly and going, oh my gosh, I could feel the filmmaker in it. You know, it had a voice and it was so interesting and it had so much heart and so much style. And then I found out it was like a Canadian movie. And so yeah, The Fly, I highly recommend all of you watching The Fly, David Cronenberg. And of course you should watch a whole bunch of David Cronenberg, because he's an awesome Canadian. The next one is Ginger Snaps, which was very much influenced by The Fly. John Fawcett and Karen Walton and Steve Hoban, the filmmakers on it, they always said it was like Heathers meets The Fly. And I got to work on the film. I was the second unit director on it. And I just remember, even though I worked on it, when I read the script and when I watched the dailies start coming in and watched the edit, I was just like, this is such an important, awesome piece of work that will stand the test of time. And it has. It's a great, great movie. So check out Ginger Snaps. And then there's a filmmaker from Calgary who's now lives in Montreal. His name is Mike Douse. My little office in Calgary, it was in a warehouse, and there was a guy that was like literally living in the warehouse in this like tiny little space, and named Mike Douse. And he shot a little movie called FUBAR that is a great movie to watch to sort of think outside of like what can be done at the emerging level. It was all shot on a handy cam. A lot of it was improvised, called FUBAR. And that got him a movie called It's All Gone, Piton. And that's one of my favorite Canadian movies. It's when I saw that, after watching FUBAR, I was like, that was really cool. And you could see, but when I saw It's All Gone, Piton, it actually kind of pissed me off, because it was like, that is really fucking good. It's like you can feel the guiding hand of the filmmaker. And it's a really, really good movie. And then finally, the Canadian filmmaker that just kind of constantly blows my mind, like for 3 years running, he's had my favorite movie, Denis Villeneuve. It's Sicario. I love that movie. I'm going to call it a Canadian movie because a Canadian directed it. It's not a Canadian movie, but the heart of it is a Canadian. Anyway, I love what the Quebec filmmakers are doing. That's something that's, that actually kind of brings it around to the voice thing, because I've always been really jealous and envious of the situation in Quebec where young filmmakers are developed and they're allowed to screw up and they work within their own star system and people come out and watch their movies and they develop these incredible voices. And right now, Quebec owns Hollywood. So yeah, Sicario, though, I think is it's an elegant, beautiful, masterful movie that just blows my mind every time I watch it. So there you go. There's five Canadian movies that I think meant a lot to me.
Amazing. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Dad. I've obviously heard some of your thoughts and experiences before, but I actually do think I still learned quite a bit from this. And thanks to those of you who came out and asked questions.
Awesome. And yeah, best of luck to all of you guys. Keep at it and squeeze every last drop out of film school, because that's exactly what you should be doing while you're there. Shoot.
Awesome, but that is all for this episode of Film Kid Asks. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on Instagram or join our Facebook group. New episodes come out every Saturday.